So the problem that you run into next that we want to help solve is post-production. And post-production is you have to take the stuff that you've recorded and we actually have to put it in a usable format for all of the internet consumption. We actually have to create the content marketing portion of your podcast and get your show up everywhere all the time. All the things that we've been talking about so far, everything up to this point is the getting you to record. And once you've recorded, once you hit that stop record button, that's when the work starts, right? That's when the hard work starts. And, you know, here's my shameless plug. That's why we built Push Button Podcast, so we could just do all that work for people. But we want to walk you through sort of what our processes are and how we do post-production at scale. And then if we can do it at scale and we show you our systems, hopefully you'll be able to see as a user here how you could, you know, sort of use those individually for your own stuff.
Welcome to PBP.fm, brought to you by Push Button Podcasts, your go-to resource for grabbing attention, building awareness, and creating authority in your marketplace. I'm Richard Matthews, your host and guide through the wonderful world of podcasting as a driver of business. Here, we teach how to use a multimedia podcast as the cornerstone of your omnipresent content marketing strategy. Whether you're an entrepreneur, podcaster, expert, or thought leader, you'll discover creative ways to leverage your digital content. From blogs to video, from YouTube to TikTok, and everything in between. We'll show you how to stand out from the noise so you can directly connect with potential customers, build strategic partnerships, and drive leads into your business. Get ready for actionable tips and tangible takeaways on improving your digital presence across the board. With that, let's dive into this week's episode of PBP.fm.
Hello and welcome back. Richard Matthews here, host of the PBP.fm podcast. I'm with my recording buddy, Kevin. Kevin, are you there?
I am here.
Awesome. We were just chatting before we hit the record button about one of the big problems we want to help solve for anyone who's doing this work is the actual post-production, right? We've talked a lot about so far getting your content library, learning how to do content outlining, and getting to the point where you are recording on a regular basis, right? You have your studio and now you're recording. And I know you're just saying, how much content have you gotten recorded over the last couple of months?
So you and me have done a bunch, but I found another recording buddy. I finally got on a consistent schedule with him. We've got about 6 hours of actually, like, there's probably about 8 hours worth of content, but about 6 hours of actual good, usable content that all needs to be edited. And now I've got the 100 hours worth of editing, doing it the way I have been doing.
Yeah, so the problem that you run into next that we want to help solve is post-production. And post-production is you have to take the stuff that you've recorded, and we actually have to put it in a usable format for all of the internet consumption. We actually have to create the content marketing portion of your podcast and you show up everywhere all the time. All the things that we've been talking about so far, everything up to this point is the getting you to record. And once you've recorded, once you've hit that stop record button, that's when the work starts, right? That's when the hard work starts. And, you know, here's my shameless plug. That's why we built Push Button Podcast, so we could just do all that work for people. But we want to walk you through sort of what our processes are and how we do post-production at scale. And then if we can do it at scale and we show you our systems, hopefully you'll be able to see as a user here how you could, you know, sort of use those individually for your own stuff. And then, you know, if you get to the point where you're like, this is still a lot of work, we'd like you to do it for us, you'll reach out to us. And so that's what we're going to go over today. And, you know, Kevin can already tell you, compared to recording and actually getting your content done, what does the post-production look like?
Okay, so I was using DaVinci Resolve, so great software. Anybody can have it for the low, low price of free if they don't need all the extra fancy woohoo stuff. But it's all watch and clip as opposed to like, so I just worked on moving to Descript. I'm sure Richard will find a link for the description. But anyways, at least there I can work in the transcription. But in here, I was just watching it. So if you got 45 minutes or an hour worth of content, even if you're watching it at 1.25 or 1.5, you're still watching 30 minutes of content to go through and clip the spots you want to clip and take out any of the filler stuff. And that's much harder in DaVinci Resolve than some of the new AI-driven tools. I was using a transcription tool that I bought many moon ago to do subtitles and kind of make some of it easier, which was HappyScribe. Great tool, but it doesn't immediately tie it back to the video.
So what I want to talk about is the assets that we need to create from the video, right? From the raw recordings, right? In our case, we were talking about, you know, we have this recording here, which is, you know, my video and your video, and we have the audio files for each of those, and we need to turn those into a number of assets. And so the assets that we're going to try and create, we're going to create a YouTube video, and we're going to create an audio podcast, and then we're going to create a written podcast for or a written piece for the blog, and we're going to create short daily content that goes out on social media. And each of those assets has a number of requirements, right? So if we start with the YouTube video, it needs to have the full edit done, right? So that's going to be getting you and I onto the actual, like, you know, this rectangular view. We got to have, you know, your face and my face. And then maybe we're switching the views up. When you're talking, your face is bigger. When I'm talking, my face is bigger. Maybe we have some animated captions. We have some branding around us that looks like, you know, they call those like the lower thirds, where you have like your name or my name showing up in the brand, for the logo for the company. We want the actual edited piece, right? So there's the video editing portion of that. And part of that video editing is also going to be doing things like cutting out things like when you're, you know, your toddler interrupts, or my toddler interrupts, or my ferret runs through the thing. We got to cut those things out. And so there's the editing process that goes in there. And maybe there's, you know, we mess up, say something, we want to cut out some of the errors and stuff like that. So there's all the video editing pieces that are going to go into making the YouTube video, right? So you got the video edit, and then you're going to have the transcription edit, right? Because the transcription is going to be for the captions for SRT files that you're going to upload to any of the video platforms. So the captions can show up, and it's useful for a lot of the social media platforms. People won't even listen to the audio. They'll just read through and read the captions. You want to make sure the captions are good. And that's all part of the video edit process. And then you're going to have a few other assets. Once you actually go to upload to YouTube, YouTube's going to require that you have a headline, right? So you're going to have to do some research on what do you want the headline to be and what's, you know, a good search platform for that. And you're going to have the description piece on YouTube. So you'll have to have a written description piece for it. Then you want to have links back to your blog and other things like that in the description. And then you'll have things like the little hashtags that they put on there. And you want to make sure that you have good hashtags for the content. And then when you also on YouTube, you have to have a customized thumbnail. I mean, otherwise it'll just pick a screenshot out of the video and it may or may not show up well, right? So you have a whole list of assets that need to be created in order for you to publish on YouTube. And then that same process is going to be replicated for the audio platforms, right? So on the audio platforms, you're not going to have the video edit part, but you want to have the audio edits all done. You might have your intros, your outros, your interstitial commercials. We still need to have the transcriptions for the podcast platforms, and you need to have the customized square graphic for the podcast platforms, and, you know, the written short description that shows on the podcast platform. So you have all the assets that go there. And then same kind of thing, when you have the blog, it'll have a title, it'll have the your actual written piece, it'll have whatever calls to action you want to have, any resources and links. You have all these different assets that you're going to create for each platform. And then when you get to the social media content, each clip that you pull out is going to need to be edited down to the clip, and then edit it into the specific platform size, right? So TikTok uses a portrait. Facebook Reels uses a portrait. Yeah. Instagram, like their regular one, uses a square. If you're on LinkedIn, it's going to use a rectangular. So you might make multiple variations of the same clip. And those variations are going to have the same kind of, so you'll have the visual assets, and then you'll have the caption that goes with it. And then maybe depending on the platform, you'll have the hashtags that go with it. And then again, depending on the platform, maybe you're allowed to put a link in with the captions, and maybe you're not. Maybe you have to say, hey, see the link in the bio. So you'll have the written assets go along with the post so you can actually publish. And so the mistake that most people make when they look at post-production is they think in terms of the final platform that they want to produce for. So they'll start their post-production process with, I'm going to make the YouTube video. And then they do all of the things for the YouTube video, right? So they do the video edit, and then they do the audio edit, and they do, you know, the written stuff, and then they do the things, and then they go to YouTube, and then they publish on YouTube, and they copy and paste all the stuff into YouTube. And then they're done with YouTube, and they go, okay, now I need to go back to the podcast platform, and let's do all the assets for the podcast platform. And so you're going back and forth, sort of shifting between doing graphic design.
I'm guilty.
Yeah. And that's how most people think about it. And it's a logical way to think about it. So there's nothing wrong with that other than it's inefficient. And because it's inefficient, that's how you end up with the, I've got 6 hours of content in my backlog, and it's taking me, you know, I can never sort of get caught up, and I can't be on a consistent schedule, and I'm not getting published stuff done every single day, because you're doing a lot of back and forth between video editor platforms and audio editing platforms and graphic design platforms and writing platforms and then scheduling platforms, so you can get it all back and get it all done.
So anything that I'm going to publish long form on, so I kind of think of it more long form, short form, because most of the short form is portrait.
Mm-hmm.
What I'll do is I'll do my long form edit, and then I'll make all the different landscape versions of that. And then I will go back in and I will set my portrait crop, because that's what I'm probably going to do almost every time because of the way I've been recording content. And then I'll go through and I'll pick out the parts. Now I've picked up a couple tools that in hopes are going to help me do the short content better, easier, faster.
Yeah. So what I want to walk you through is the process that we use at Push Button Podcast, so we can do this at scale for a lot of content, right? Because we have right now we have 30 shows under management, and we're doing 200 or 300 pieces of content a day. And so we have to be really efficient at this. And so hopefully you can see the process that I'm going to give you will both help you and help anyone who's watching this make their process shorter so they can have better outcome from, you know, the amount of time it takes to actually do the post-production. And so just on average, because again, we've done this for a number of years, even without some of the AI tools, on average, every hour of content that you're going to need to produce to get all the work done for it is somewhere between 8 and 15 hours of post-production work if you do it the way that you might have been considering doing it or have been doing it in the past. And I know...
Yeah, the way I'm for sure 10 to 20 hours for every hour of content.
Yeah, for every hour of content, just to get all the pieces that you want to get done.
Yeah.
And so that's where we want to shift that. And how do we say get it to just a couple of hours, right? Maybe 2-3 hours for every hour of content to get all the assets that you want to have done. And then that gives you your content where you're going a couple of hours to record a week and a couple of hours to produce everything. You might have 4 hours a week into your whole content production schedule instead of 20 hours a week into your production schedule, which is a lot easier to stomach for most small businesses when you're looking at, like I said, we've mentioned this before, your content is not a direct sales driver. It's not create content today, get sales tomorrow. It's going to create sales over the long term, but it's not going to be an immediate revenue driver. So you can't have it take a tremendous amount of your time that could be going towards revenue producing activities.
Generating activities, yeah, for sure.
We still want to do it because it's got a humongous upside potential over the long term. So we need to make it palatable to do over that period of time. So the process, I call it siloing your post-production, right? And you're familiar with the term siloing because you do SEO work and other things. And so a silo is taking all of, you know, something similar and putting it into like a category, right? And what would you, you know, I guess off the top of your head, how would you describe siloing to someone who's not familiar with it?
So when I would talk about it in SEO, I'd be like, you're going to have several. So we'd always talk about it in terms of topics. You're going to have several high level chapter headings, and those 5 chapters are going to be your silos. So everything that has to do with dogs is going to be in the dog silo. Everything that has to do with cats is going to be in the cat silo. Everything that has to do with bird, right? And then we don't mix them because we want to make sure that these things link back and forth so we get the most bird SEO juice or the most cat SEO juice. I mean, all of it's magic anyways.
Yeah.
So,
and that's exactly right. Right. And what that does, when you talk about post-production and siloing it, as soon as you hear what we're talking about, you're like, oh, that makes so much more sense in terms of efficiency. Right. And so we're going to silo the tasks of post-production because there's similar things that need to happen for every platform. Right. So for instance, every platform is going to have a title, right? You're going to have, YouTube's going to have a title. The podcast is going to have a title. Your captions on your social media posts, every one of them is going to have a little title that goes with it. So instead of coming back to your writing platform every single time you need to post something new and writing a new title or figuring out what the titles are, what if you just wrote all the titles at one time, right? Or what if you wrote all of the descriptions at one time, right? And so the way we think of it is we think of things, and it's like, let's do all of the written assets at one time. And so we think through ahead of time, what are all the outcomes we want? We want to have YouTube video, we want to have a podcast, we want to have 6 short clip contents, we want to have a blog. What are all the written assets we need, right? So we're going to need a YouTube title, we're going to need a podcast title, we're going to need a blog title, and we're going to need 6 short clip titles. And so let's write them all at once, right? And same kind of thing, we're going to need a YouTube description, we're going to need a podcast description, we're going to need an excerpt for the blog, and we're going to need the show notes written for the thing. And so we can write all those things at one time in one document following a structured template that has all the written assets that we're going to need for everything we're going to publish. Right. So we write.
Do you find that you write a different podcast description than you do YouTube description?
We do. So the YouTube description has 5,000 characters and we use as much of it as we can. And because there's a lot more room there, podcast descriptions are right around 500 words. So there's a lot less space there. And so you have to be a little bit shorter and punchier. So we have a show notes, like a written document, and we'll write all of the written assets in one document. And so what that does for us over the long term is now we can write all the written assets. There's a bunch of benefits there, right? So all the benefits are all the things are written. Now, when we go to do the video edit and the video editor is like, hey, I need a title to show the title on the screen in the lower thirds. It's already there. He can just grab it from the written document, right? And when the graphic designer is like, hey, I need to have the title for the thumbnail, then he can just go and grab the title for the thumbnail and it's already written and he doesn't have to go back and forth. There's no back and forth interactions with those things. If you're doing this as a single person, you get the same kind of efficiencies because now you're like, all the written assets are done. Now all the video assets are done. Now all the graphic assets are done. You're not switching modes where you're going from one thing to another thing. You just focus on the one task and move on. And then when you get to the publishing, you have a flow. When you get to publishing, now it's just copy and paste, right? It's copy and paste the stuff into YouTube, click upload. Copy and paste the stuff into the podcast, click upload. Copy and paste the stuff onto your social media platform, click upload, right? And now you're not going back and forth between publishing and video editing and publishing and writing and publishing and graphic design, and right? You're not going back and forth any of those things, and you can streamline the process really well. And so that's what siloing post-production means from a high level. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So what I want to get into then is what our actual silo looks like so you can just take it and use it because it works really well. So a couple of things that have been really, really helpful for us is figuring out what order to do the things in, right? Because one of the things that we learned early on is that you can't do all of your video edits unless you have the written assets done, because you're going to need the descriptions, you're going to need some other things, you're going to need the transcriptions for the captions and other things. So what I want to walk you through then is what our actual process is, all the things that we've learned in terms of how do you order your silos? Because if you have a good order to your silos, then it makes you really efficient moving through things. So an example of that is what we just talked about with like doing the graphic design. You want to do the graphic design after you do all the written assets, because the graphic design is going to require the titles, right? So if you have all the titles written, when they go to do the YouTube thumbnail or the podcast thumbnail, they can just pull it out of the written asset document. Same kind of thing with your video. We used to start with the video assets, and we realized starting with the video assets is actually more difficult than starting with the transcription, because the transcription allows everything else to go smoother. So our order of operations is this. So our first silo is, it's actually file management, which is, so I know that sounds boring, but we start with the file management because it makes everything else easier. So we're going to take the download files from, you know, like we're using Squadcast to record, but if you're using Zoom or you're using Riverside or whatever you're doing, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to collect all the files and we're going to put them into our backup folder. So we just have in our post-production folder for every episode, the first file in there is just raw files. And we download them all and we stick them in the backup. And that's the first thing we do, because if you don't have your raw files, if you don't have those backed up somewhere and something gets effed up in the future, you're going to regret not having the backup files. Ask us how we know. So
I don't want to.
Yeah. So step one, get your backup files all put in there and do the file management. So we do a couple of things with that. We're going to take the raw recording for the backup files, and then we're going to run them through. We have someone, we call them just our data manager person, who just downloads all the stuff and they get them all uploaded to the backup. And we run them through. Handbrake is a video, what would you call it? It's like a transcoding or...
The transcoding software.
Yeah, it's a transcoding software.
I've worked with, I just don't know why you haven't automated this away with a script.
We probably could automate it away with a script.
FFmpeg, man.
And so we're going to Kevin's going to show me how to make it even more efficient, but we run them through and we just work on, you know, the raw video files. They'll be like 2 or 3 gigabytes. And since most of our outcomes are 1080p or smaller, we don't actually need that huge file. So we'll run it through FFmpeg and Handbrake to get a half a gigabyte or a 800 megabyte file right in that range. That has the same quality that we're looking for. And now we have both tracks of myself and our guest in a much more manageable file size. And that's the first thing that we do. And then the next thing that we do, the next silo after that, is to get them into our video editing platform. And so in our case, we use Descript. And we'll put a link to that in the description. Descript is a wonderful platform because it does a number of things for us. And the biggest wins for us and our team is that it's collaborative, right? So I can have my transcriptionist working on something at the same time that my video editor is working on something on the same program, right? At the same time, the same, like whatever piece of work that we're working on. Project, that's the word I was looking for. On the same project.
On the same project.
The same project.
I understood you.
And so we put the files in there. And the first thing that we're going to do is we're going to work on the transcription. And so the transcription is going to have a couple of pieces. The first one is we're going to do, we call it tip and tail, is you cut off the beginning and you cut off the end. So that the video editor has a good spot, like, hey, this is where we're starting the episode. This is where we're ending the episode. And then the other thing we're going to have our transcriptionist do is cut out all the bloopers, right? You know, when my ferret intervenes or your three-year-old intervenes, or we have
when the lights come on and we have a child yelling about needing to go potty.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever those things are, we're going to cut all those things out because the video editor doesn't need to do anything with those. We don't need them spending their time doing that. The video editor is a much higher dollar employee anyways. And so we're looking at how do we reduce the amount of work that's on their platform. So the first one is cut out all the edits, tip and tail, cut out the big mistakes. Ums, ahs, anyways, tip and tail, and bloopers. Just cut them out. Now we've got a video file. And the second thing we have our transcriptionists do after that is just go through the whole thing and correct any transcription errors that the AI made. That's maybe a 15-20 minute job. You can listen to it on a couple of different speeds, 1.2x, 1.5x, and you just listen to it and be like, oh, there's a mistake, fix it. Oh, there's a mistake, fix it. Now we've got a clean transcription and we have all the errors moved out And then the other thing that the transcriptionist does is while they're going through that, anytime they hear a piece of content that looks like it's going to be useful for our short clips in the future, we just highlight them. Use the Descript highlight feature. We're like, oh, that's a good clip. Highlight it. Doesn't do anything else. And now their work is done, right? And all of the transcription work can now move on to the written assets of the show. And so we take the transcript and we give it over to a writer. And the writer is the next thing. So we'll, now that we have the transcription of the show, the writer can now read the clean transcription and they can download the clean transcription as well. So they can run that transcription through AI tools like ChatGPT or Claude or any of the other ones that exist. They all are useful at doing this. You can take an hour-long transcription, run it through and be like, hey, give me the summary points of this. And they can listen to the episode and get the summary of it. And now they can do all the writing assets that are necessary. And so that's the next category is all the writing. And so the writing, we take the transcript, run it through AI tools, and we're going to take the summary that we get from the AI tools, and we're going to have the writer fill out a written template. And so the written template has all the written assets that they're going to need for every platform. So that's the YouTube thumbnail heading, and it's the YouTube title and the podcast title and the podcast cover graphic title and all the captions for the short things. Because the caption, the short clips were already highlighted. So the writer can look at it and be like, okay, I need to have a title for that caption and a title for that one. We can have all the assets written from that one set of things, right? So now when the writer's done, the video editor has a full set of assets. They have a full edited transcript. They have a full set of written documents on all the things that they needed to have. So that they're going to have like links to the bios and the Twitter profiles for the guests. They'll have all the stuff that will be in the written documents. So when they go to the edits, they can just click, 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 and add the things on that they need to add on. And now instead of spending time going back and forth researching stuff and spending time figuring out what needs to be written here, what needs to be written there, paying video editor rates to do all of that, you know, the work that you might pay someone to do the transcription or the writing work, they can just focus on the video editing. And that makes their job a lot simpler and it makes it a lot faster and they enjoy it more because it's in their realm of their expertise, that kind of stuff. And so it makes all that a lot easier. And then the next thing is going to be your graphic assets. And so your graphic assets are now the video editor has exported all the video files. We have, you know, the video file for YouTube. We have the video file for all the short clips on social media. And we have the audio files for whatever the audio platforms are. And they're all uploaded back into our drive under here's, you know, the finished assets for video and audio stuff. And so that goes into another folder, goes to the graphic designer, knows which pieces they need to create. And they have all the assets for that. They got the asset that they're doing the design for. And they have the written assets they're going to use on top of it. So they're going to create the YouTube thumbnail. They're going to create the podcast thumbnail. And they're going to create, if there's like on Twitter or on LinkedIn, there might be like an image graphic that they're going to use along with some of those social media posts. So they can just create all the stuff. They just copy and paste into their graphic editing platform. All those things are done. Now, the last step of the profile is now we need to publish everything. And so then we give it to, in our case, we call them a data management specialist, which is our fancy name for this person is going to take all the finished assets that the writer finished, the video editor finished, and the graphic designer finished, and they're going to manage the uploading and scheduling. And so we do that in two pieces. One is the long form, and then the short form. So the long form is on your big platforms, YouTube, your podcast platform, and your blog. All of those let you schedule content, which is really useful when you're trying to get as far ahead of your content production as you can. And so what we'll do is we'll upload the video to YouTube, schedule it to premiere on the launch day, and hopefully we're 2 or 3 weeks ahead on that, and they can just copy and paste all the data, and they can upload the video, they can upload the video files, schedule it for the future date. Then we go back to the podcast platform, same thing, upload all the things, and it's just upload, copy, paste, schedule. And then we go to the blog, upload, copy, paste, schedule. And that'll give us the backlink, and we do some interlinking here. So on the blog post, you put the YouTube video on the blog post, you put the podcast embed on the blog post, and then you take the backlink that you got from the blog and you go back to YouTube, stick it in the description, go back to the podcast, stick it in the description. So you got some interlinking going on for SEO. And now you have the backlink for all of your social media posts. And then we go to our social media scheduling platform and we're going to upload and schedule all of the content for that week with the links back to the blog post. And they do all of that in one session. And now they can, our data management person can upload everything and get it all scheduled in just 15, 20 minutes per episode. And that's our high level, sort of our silos. And that order has worked really well for us. And I'm sure we could certainly make it better with some automations like you were talking about, but.
Oh yeah, so the file moving and file compression chain, like the transcoding, that's super easy to do automatically, where a computer says there's something new in this folder, pulls it, transcodes it, and it's done. Like, no human ever has to touch it. As soon as it drops, it would know and go. If you have a system that's working, the problem always ends up being that somebody has to stop for 2 minutes to get a new system working. And so what is the cost benefit this week? But I think in the long arc, you're talking about, if it takes him 15 minutes to get there and to drop it in a handbrake and say go, you would save that 15 minutes over and over again forever.
Yeah, that would certainly be useful. But that's actually a really good point in terms of talking about why we built a system this way. Every one of these things was like, how do we make this a little bit faster? How do we make this a little bit faster? It's those incremental gains. And that's how we ended up with our siloing process the way that we did, because we were like, okay, with your graphic designer, what are the things that stop you from finishing your job? Like, anytime you have to leave your graphic design program, in our case, our designer uses Canva. Yeah. Anytime you have to leave Canva to go get something, that's a inefficiency in the process. And so that's how we ended up with our silo order the way we do, because a lot of it was like, okay, we need to have all these written assets, and we need to have, you know, the pictures of the person, and we need to have all these things so that they can just do their work really quickly. And so what we were looking at is like, for each person, what are their prerequisites? And how can we provide them with all of their prerequisites before they move to the next step, so they can just do their thing and they have all the assets ready to go? And so if you're doing it yourself, it's really easy to not care that you don't have all the prerequisites to finish your task. But when you're doing it at scale, like we are, you want to have as little back and forth as possible, so that each person can just be like, okay, I've got here, I'm ready to do my thing. My task has been assigned to me, and they just have all the assets they need to go from start to finish on their task. And so because it works for us at a scale, what it does for you as an individual is, if you follow that same schedule, the same kind of thing, it allows you to move really quickly through everything and be a lot more efficient with your time. And, you know, it seems like your time is free when you're spending it, but if you'll follow...
No, it definitely feels like a cost to me.
Yeah.
But I understand what you're saying. There's enough things that I definitely... And this is probably just the entrepreneur in me too. Like, am I doing something right now that's costing me downtime? Am I doing it right? I stopped mowing lawns, my own personal lawns, several years ago, because it turned out that it actually cost me about $300 most times I did it, because I wasn't doing the things that were earning that money.
So,
and so, like, yep, I'm not doing this anymore. It's out. And then I hired a guy, and I definitely saved money having somebody else do it for money.
Are you ready to amplify your influence and stand out from the noise? Join Richard Matthews on PBP.fm as he explores the power of podcasting, social media, and strategic content to boost your reach. You'll discover the latest trends in video, audio, and influencer marketing, plus unlock insider tips to create binge-worthy content spotlighting you as a leader. With upbeat energy and clear, empowering advice, Richard guides publishers, experts, and entrepreneurs on starting a podcast, improving social strategy, and connecting with your perfect audience. Visit pbp.fm and book a podcast strategy session to start spreading your message today.
So what we want to do next then is, we want to take all this information and put it into a project management system, right? So you can, like, in our case, right, you have a very clear start of the project. And the start of the project is, you hit the stop record button, right? We hit stop record. We now have the assets we need to start post-production on. And so that's when we can start looking at, how do we take these and put them into a project management system that has the checklists we need to follow? And so that's actually what we're going to do on our next episode. We'll actually do this live and help Kevin set up his post-production project management system. And we'll be copying basically what we're doing for our clients and what we do internally, and helping create that. And hopefully it'll be really helpful for you, and it'll be helpful for our people who are watching this, to see what it looks like to take a siloed post-production system and turn it into something that allows you to be efficient. And I think the most potent part about doing that is not necessarily that you have a project management system that you can follow, but once you have that in place, now you can start looking at, okay, where are the things that I don't like doing? Like, I don't like doing the video editing, for instance, or maybe you don't like doing the transcription, or maybe you don't like doing the graphic design. You can bring someone in and be like, hey, it's at the graphic design stage, assign it to that person, and you can take those things off of your plate. And that's how you start eventually building yourself out of the work.
Oh, the worst part about the transcription is hearing myself talk.
Have someone else do that.
That's true for everybody. Everybody hates listening to themselves. Like, do I really sound like, oh.
So I have a theory about that, actually. Right. And you hear yourself from inside your head. And so you're hearing both your internal voice and the sound that comes out and hits your ear again. But when you hear yourself on video, you're only hearing what other people hear. And so it doesn't sound like you to you.
Yeah, no, 100%. I've read a bit about it. One of the interesting things because I kind of been down the rabbit hole a little bit on podcast content, YouTube thumbnails, a lot of people have gone to the 3-word rule. And so instead of using the episode title, because they're probably going to A/B test that, they pick 3 like capture words. I think it's 3 to 5, but 3 is the magic number you always hear thrown around. Do you do anything like that with your graphic designer? Instead of saying, here's the title, you say, here's the title. So the general gist is, don't lose sleep. And so maybe the title is best ways to sleep deeper and whatever, right? It's your 60 character title, but your thumbnail, because you want to reduce those lead number of words, because after millions of hours of testing, all the big channels discovered that less words is betterer on thumbnails. So the whole world's going the same way. And I mean, the problem is we get this thing where like everybody does, like everybody's a ship on the ocean and one guy does it and it works and the next guy.
So in answer to your question, the reality is for the type of stuff that we're doing, because our goal is not necessarily to get the most views per video, we're not spending a lot of time on split testing thumbnails, right? Because we're not doing the YouTube channel for the purpose of having a YouTube channel. We're doing the YouTube channel for the purpose of showing up everywhere in our marketplace all the time. So again, our KPIs are slightly different than what we're looking at, but we do make the titles look good and look engaging. But we're not like super split testing the thumbnails for the most click-through rate possible on the searches. Because if you're looking at like the reason why we're doing this content is, I've mentioned this before, is the heartbeat check, right? When someone's going to want to do business with you as a plumber or as a, you know, service provider or whatever it is that your business is, they're going to come and they're going to check out your social media profiles and they're going to scroll through your stuff and be like, oh, these guys are actually, they talk about this stuff all the time, right? And so you want it to be clear. It's not necessarily that people are going to be searching for stuff on YouTube and finding your things. They will. You want it to look good if they do. And so we're trying to do those kind of things. But our outcome is in your local community, when people see you and they go to check on you, or they got someone new who's looking like, hey, I want to see who I'm going to choose to do business with. When they look at your social profiles and they look at your content that you're putting out, that they're, when they check through a few of it to see what you're actually doing, that they're like, yep, this is the guy that I want to work with, right?
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing we discussed is access leverage. So the click-through rate isn't quite the same when the actual person you want to talk to is the person you're interviewing or the person you're having a conversation with, either way.
And so because that's what our outcomes are looking for, we're not going to spend as much time optimizing like the individual title, like thumbnail graphic that we use, which would be different if the YouTube channel was the business. But the YouTube channel is not the business. It is supporting the business. So we have slightly different KPIs we're looking for. Hopefully that answers that question.
Yeah.
So that's essentially siloing post-production at a high level. Hopefully that makes sense. Do you have any questions on it? Like, should I mention any of the other tools that we're using? Or I don't know, like anything before we get into on our next episode where we actually...
Is there a silo for audio that really has its own workflow? Like, we haven't talked about audio at all for the audio podcast.
The audio is just part of the...
You just rip the video out, audio out once it's edited?
When the video editor is doing his work, the last step of the video editor, and we'll show this on when we get into actually doing the project management, his checklist is export all the files, right? And part of his finished thing. And so he's going to export the video file. And if you're almost any of your platforms that you do your video editing with will have an export audio. Yeah. And so we're going to just export the audio as its own piece. So you'll export the final video, you'll export the final audio, and you'll export all the short clips that you have. And so once you have all of those final pieces, you'll have the audio piece that you can put into your drive folder.
You guys don't do anything extra special with the audio. You just export it from the podcast that is the video podcast.
Yeah. So we're making a video podcast.
That's what I figured also. Yeah. I mean, they're both the same content, essentially, just one doesn't have the visual.
Yeah. And that's for, you know, the people who want to subscribe on iTunes or I guess it's not called iTunes anymore. It's called Apple Podcasts, right? You want to subscribe on Apple Podcasts and listen to it in your car. They don't want the video asset, right? They want the audio asset to listen to.
Yeah. I read an interesting statistic that Google Podcasts now had like twice as many podcast subscribers as Apple Podcasts, because YouTube counts towards that number.
Yeah, they are counting YouTube in it. I was like, if you're going just audio, Apple has like 86% of the marketplace. But if you're counting all the video podcasts, probably YouTube is a huge distribution platform for podcasts.
Yeah, the funny part is I actually listen to all my podcasts through the Google podcast app platform because I'm an Android.
So
if you're not American, you'll discover that iPhones are not as ubiquitous as you think. I had an ironic conversation with an American friend because he said he made some comment about how everybody had an iPhone. And I was like, but like 70% of the world uses Android. And so then we started doing statistics. It turns out like 85% of Americans use iPhones.
Yeah.
Whereas like Canada's more like 50-50. And as soon as you get across the ocean, the number goes.
It's very different. That's why if you're paying attention to Apple's, we call them their investor meetings, they talk a lot about the growth potential in other countries because they have most of the market in the U.S.
They got the U.S. Yeah, they got the U.S. 85%. It shocked me that it was 85% because now, again, I'm in a microcosm of Android users anyways because we're highly technical. We want everything customizable. We want, right? Like just because of the type of person I am, the type of person who tends to be friends with me.
Yeah, they're all Android users.
They all end up being Android users because, like, why would I pay for that?
What? Yeah.
Right?
Which is
every
really
time
important
people point. Are jumping up and down about their new feature on their iPhone, I'm like, oh, the feature I've had for 3 years? Cool.
Yeah. But it's an important point for podcasters. If you're putting content out, you want to make sure that your content is available on the platforms that your users are going to use. And while you absolutely want to be on Apple Podcasts, if you serve an American market, if you're serving anything outside of the American market or you want to make sure you're hitting all of the markets, you want to make sure you're on Google Podcasts. You want to make sure you're on Spotify. You want to make sure you're on Amazon Music. Right? You want to be on all those platforms because not everyone uses iPhone.
So Google Podcasts, I think, is free and it's attached to YouTube. Is Apple Podcasts free to upload to?
Yeah. So when we get to going through the post-production stuff, we'll give you all the tools that we use, but you'll pick a podcast host. What's interesting is actually most of your podcast platforms, they actually pull from Apple Podcasts. So if you're in Apple Podcasts, you're going to end up on most of the rest of them. So you want to be on those platforms. And the thing that I want to point out is you mentioned the video and the audio, right? And what do we do with audio? One of the important things with the audio is you want to make sure that you're publishing to your blog and you're embedding the YouTube video and embedding the audio platform. Because anyone who's listening to you on your podcast, you want to make sure you can say regularly, like, hey, if you're listening to this and you want to see the visuals that go along with it, if you're talking about something visual, like on our next episode, we're going to show some of the stuff on the screen. If anytime we're doing that, be like, hey, if you're listening to this on the audio platform, make sure you check out the YouTube link. Click the link in the description. And you want to make sure that link in the description on the audio platform will take them back to a place that has the videos.
That was the question I was just going to ask. You answered the question that was in my head.
Yeah.
So what happens when you're screencasting a project management platform, but you answered the question.
Yeah. And so you just want to make sure that all the things are linked together. And so we'll go through that when we go through the checklist this next week. But yeah, from a high level, that's how you make your post-production really efficient. And you can get it down to, 2 hours for post-production instead of 20.
If you have an episode that is basically all visual, do you guys flag that in some way to say, like, this episode is not going to translate to audio very well? Do X?
We don't. If you're doing a visual thing, we just make sure we mention it at the beginning when we're doing a thing. It's like, hey, this is we're going to be doing a lot of discussion. We'll do that being its next episode. You'll see us do it. And it's like, hey, this is a really visual episode. So if you're listening to us on the podcast platforms, make sure you check out the link for YouTube that'll be in the description. Right? And as long as you're doing that, people, you can still listen to and you'll hear us talk through all the things that might be interesting. And they'll know from listening to it, yeah, I want to go and check out the visuals for that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just thinking about it from my perspective. A lot of the stuff that I've really been working towards doing, a lot of it's much better with the screencast. Like without the visual medium, it's hard to follow along with software information, even if you're just talking about like how you want to use the software and not being able to see the different components and see how they're laid out. Sometimes it's very difficult to understand the high level thought process.
Yeah. And you can always choose to upload videos to the podcast platforms. You're just going to lose the audience that wants to listen to things instead of watch them.
Yeah, 100%.
So,
well, one of the reasons I asked too is because, again, lots of money to throw at this. So his problem is that Hermosi cuts out a lot of stuff that's super visual from what he publishes as podcast to the game podcast.
Yeah.
Or he says, there's a full episode and it includes a whole bunch of visuals, but we're not going to go over any of that stuff because the visuals help it make sense. And then so you get like lots of these like, oh, I listened to the hour long video the other day and now you published the 10 minute clip that doesn't require the visuals to the podcast.
And you can, you can certainly do that. We don't, but you could.
Well, I'm excited to see the project management thing next time. I'm going to get myself half set up so that I can mock you somewhere else. because I think I'm going to try to set up a similar siloed process in an open source project management system.
Cool. Well, so what I'll do is we'll prep our like checklist and stuff, and we'll pull up your project management things, and we'll work on setting some things up. And we can probably use a couple of different examples, like, hey, here's what it would look like in, say, a ClickUp or a Trello, and here's what it would look like in an open source platform.
So have you been crying because ClickUp 3 came out?
I haven't been crying. We've been quite enjoyed it, actually. My team loves it.
Yeah, no, I was crying with joy. You obviously don't see all the commercials for ClickUp 3.
They're doing a good job not retargeting me because we're already a customer. So,
but no, perfect. No, that's so I'm not a customer. They target me extensively. But there's like two different commercials where they have people crying. They're like, I've been waiting so long for this. It's so beautiful.
Oh, that's funny. I need to go and get myself on their retargeting list so I can watch their ads.
Yeah, you should even just go to YouTube and look for ClickUp 3 ads. They got lots of them. They're pretty intense. They're pretty happy to let you know 3 is out.
I know. They did make us wait a year for it, so I can see why people are crying in tears over it. Yeah, so we'll get into project management. We'll show you our ClickUp, and we'll show you how to set up a new one, and it will be back for our next episode.
Perfect. I'm excited.
See you guys in the next one.
Thanks for joining us this week on PBP.FM. Make sure to visit our website, PBP.FM, where you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via RSS so you'll never miss a show. While you're at it, if you found value in the show, we'd appreciate a rating on Apple Podcasts. Or if you'd simply tell a friend about the show, that would help us out too. And if you'd like to get help building an omnipresent content marketing strategy with a podcast and you want help, you might want to book a podcast strategy session with us at pbp.fm. Just click the Book a Strategy Session button and book a time on our calendar. We look forward to speaking with you. And be sure to tune in next week for our next episode.